Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Monday, July 18th, 2022. A number of things to get into. A big issue. Perhaps over the weekend you heard, and even late last week, you heard about the House bill turning over, how can I put this? And I want to be technically correct on this. House Bill 4530 or 4350. I guess I'm dyslexic there. House Bill 4350 that essentially turns over or abandons oversight, allows the U.S. military to do all branches to do operations here domestically. All right. Now, if you take that just at face, obviously, we know that that portends a martial law scenario, but let's dig a little deeper into this. What are we seeing today? We're seeing show trials, are we not? Specifically, show trials with respect to the January 6th, quote, insurrection. And we're seeing a guy in the White House who is incompetent. Mentally, I believe, it's my belief, he's mentally incompetent. He is not running anything, which begs the question then, okay, so who is running? Who's running things? Then we have to look at something a little bit different and something a little bit bigger. So rather than just saying, for example, hey, you know what, martial law, it's here. It's going to be back-ended in to events or the legislative calendar. I can see that. I can see that. But what's the backstory here? We have to go to current events and look at some historical events as well. Now, the big historical event that undergirds all of this is the events of 9/11. And the subsequent initiation of the Patriot Act. Keep that in mind for a moment. Now, I know Conservative Treehouse did an excellent job on running a couple of articles about this, but the connection was not made to what's going on today with respect to this H. Bill 4350. And why? Well, let's make that connection, shall we? And up on your screen right now, if you're watching this at HagmanReport.com or Rumble or Brighteon, you can see House Resolution 4350. That's actually the last year's version. I apologize. Was that what I gave you in the PDF, Eric the Tech? Yep, okay. The addendum to that is much more incisive, and I'll get into that momentarily. But the January 6th committee that's going on right now, as a matter of fact, also on trial is Stephen Bannon today, but, I'm just going to postpone that for a while here, but the January 6th committee in D.C. has a much bigger motive than most Americans understand. Now, I'm citing from Conservative Treehouse on this as well. But again, going deeper and connecting more dots here. The elimination of President Trump, of course, from the political landscape is an exercise in protecting a surveillance state from the threat that President Trump has represented. Okay. Now, writes Sundance from Conservative Treehouse. That said, I'm not sure that even Donald Trump himself realizes and or appreciates the scale of the threat he is considered to a system created in the aftermath of 9/11/01. However, consider this a precursor to the next post on this website, and there was a subsequent post to that, that will hopefully show exactly what the scale of the problem is. And I think this hits it out of the park. This puts everything in perspective, because who is on the January 6th committee? If you look at the mopes on the January 6th committee, who's the lead charging individual ostensibly there? Liz Cheney. And Liz Cheney is the daughter of Dick Cheney, obviously. Now, she gets a lot of attention for her opposition to President Trump, but what most people don't really understand right now is the direct and consequential nature of her opposition. Liz Cheney, again, don't forget, the daughter of former VP Dick Cheney, has a vested interest in removing the threat of Trump because of the real issue comes back to what her father created in the aftermath of 9/11. Well, what did he create in that aftermath? The domestic political surveillance state, period. Remember the Patriot Act. Remember all the NDA. Remember all of that. There are two defensive operations currently underway in Washington that are designed to protect the biggest issue that most people don't even refer to, talk about, or even know exist. Lisa Monaco, you remember her. I have a link in the program description box, the HagmanReport.com. You can, and there she is there on your screen. She is the Deputy Attorney General. She is the former Obama White House senior national security advisor. And she was the legal liaison from the executive branch. Now, you remember Lisa Monaco from the Obama regime. Hopefully you do. Also from Spygate, Russiagate, whatever you want to call that. Commit this person to memory. Understand who she is, what she is, and her position right now. She's the Deputy Attorney General for the Department of Justice. Lisa Monaco is in place to protect the former Obama White House from legal and or political responsibility in their weaponizing of domestic law enforcement operations inside the U.S. Department of Justice and the FBI. Again, the FBI is fully weaponized against not terrorists, but domestic terrorists, otherwise known as patriotic Americans. Monaco, the woman you saw on your screen, her job is to target anyone who might reveal what Obama did and what systems are currently in place within the surreptitious intelligence community operations. Now, please pay attention to this. This is important. In the context of what you, in the context of this, well, we're going to just let the military go without oversight. Again, this is the context, and this will better explain, I believe, the threat that you and I face. Monaco is responsible for, when you know what she's doing, when you know what that woman is responsible for doing, you'll also understand why the National School Boards Association wrote a letter to the DOJ asking Attorney General Merrick Garland to use his influence and control over the FBI to target parents who attended school board meetings in opposition to the agenda of the progressive left. Now, we've talked a lot about that, but again, understand how deep this goes and how you and I will be caught up and I say will instead of could be, will be caught up in this portrayal as domestic terrorists. Very few people know what mechanisms are known to the National School Board Association that would facilitate their request to the Department of Justice. Now, think about that. Because any normal organization, other organization, can you just like write a letter to the DOJ and all of a sudden you've got the DOJ's full attention? The bigger picture about all of this, the request from the National School Board Association was a request to deploy tools that only exist thanks to the bipartisan globalist work of two people, Barack Hussein Obama, no friend, no patriot to the United States, and Dick Cheney, globalist extraordinaire. Right now, there is an ongoing national security system that is watching you, that is listening to you. It's listening to me and everyone else that DC, that the globalist infrastructure considers a threat. It's within this system that you find the real issue and motive as to why Democrats and Republicans would be united in their effort to remove President Trump as a perceived threat. This is the bigger picture behind that legislation to remove that oversight from military operations domestically. And numerous people have written about the political goals. My goodness, you can find oodles of articles about the goals of the J6 committee. Yet those people, many of those who write about this don't really understand what Washington, what the globalist infrastructure embedded in Washington by the WEF, by the UN, by the Council on Foreign Relations, all of these people, what they are trying to hide, what they're trying to protect from the American people, from getting our attention. It is only when you fully understand their motives that you can fully appreciate the scale of what they will do to keep this particular system in place. We're talking about a national security surveillance system that was created by Dick Cheney, Liz Cheney's father, and then fully weaponized by Barack Hussein Obama. Now, understand, Obama is the key ingredient in this part of this equation. He's the key component to this part of the equation. Now, again, many layers above Obama, but Obama is solidifying what we're seeing taking place. So when you look at where'd this legislation come from? You know, people talk about Obama's third term, right? Well, here it is. Because we know that Biden, he's not competent to even find his own chair. I was going to say pick a seat, but then the jokes abound, right? So I want to show you, on that same theme, I want to show you two videos. Now, I want to make sure I have the videos in the proper order because this is important. How many remember this video? And this video, let me see here. Oh, I got both labeled video one, don't I? That's pretty cool. Eric the Tech, for a Monday. How's your Monday going? You doing okay?
Doing good.
Yeah, man. It would be the second video one that we're going to play. It's a very short video. This is the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, saying, I didn't know about the London plot. And if you don't remember the London plot, don't worry about it. It could have been, a recipe for chocolate. It doesn't matter what that was, but it was a terrorist plot, London bombing plot. But let's go ahead and play video number one to bring back memories. The second video one. Sorry about that.
But we wondered, how did they stay in control with so much information coming in every day? For instance, the afternoon of our interview, the day's news had been filled with the terror arrest, 12 people in London just that morning. But when we asked the director of intelligence...
First of all, London. How serious is it? Any implication that it was coming here? Any of the things that they have seen were coming here?
Mm-hmm.
Director Clapper.
The arrest of the 12 individuals by the British this morning.
Yes.
This is something that the British informed us about early this morning as it was taking place.
Later in the interview, I came back to the director. Did he really not know?
I was a little surprised you didn't know about London, Director Clapper.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't.
Well, you referenced London, but you didn't talk about the arrests.
Okay. Do I have to explain the importance of that video? I will eventually, but when you have Clapper kind of saying, huh? Oh, I didn't know about this massive plot, London bombing plot, a massive plot. What was he paying attention to at that time in his capacity? Well, hold on for a moment, because again, you have to look at today's events and what's happening today through the lens of really everything that happened from 9/11 forward. Now, feel free to take 9/11 as a single event and go backwards and of course, see how things played out and who the players were, are, and still continue to be. Okay, but let's go forward here. Because things are going to get really, really bad in a real big hurry. Obama and Holder. You want to put their pictures up here? Because I'm going to talk about them a little bit. Although they didn't create the weaponized Department of Justice and FBI. The institutions were already created and weaponized by the Patriot Act. And you've got to look at the Patriot Act for what it is. It was always designed to be turned inward against the patriots. Hence the name of the United States of America. That's you and me. Obama and Holder, as stated by Sundance in the article, they took the pre-existing system, they reformed it, they weaponized it. They created this tool to go after their opposition, their political opposition. You'll have to pardon me. I've really got a bad jaw here, so I apologize. But anyway, right after 9/11, right after the DC national security apparatus, the vice president at that time, who the architect of the surveillance apparatus, Dick Cheney. The national security divisions were constructed to preserve continuity of government and simultaneously view all Americans as potential threats. Now, there's a lot of information in the article which I'm citing. And again, the reason I'm citing this is because of its relevance to today. So check the program description box at HagemanReport.com. And yes, I know the links on the other platforms are bad. I'm working on that, okay? Give me a break. All right. After 9/11, the electronic security surveillance system that was originally created to monitor threats from abroad was repointed to the U.S. mainland. That's when all of our electronic metadata came under federal surveillance. Now think about that, especially in the context of the 2016 election. That, at that point, what do you think Snowden was trying to tell American people, tell the American people? And why do you think Snowden is facing extradition? Why do you think Snowden is right now being persecuted? Why do you think there was a plot to assassinate Snowden? I'm sorry, the assassination was for Assange, I'm sorry. But Snowden, why do you think they painted him to be such a bad guy? What Obama and Holder did was refine the internal targeting mechanisms so that only their political opposition became the target of the new national security systems. The problems that we have right now, and as a consequence of this, direct consequence of this, are directly a result of two very distinct points that were merged by Obama himself. And this is so important to understand. Number one, the post 9/11 monitoring of electronic communications of American citizens. And the second point is Obama's team creating a fine and a very refined knob, if you will, that it focused on the politics, the political ideology of their targets. Now, this is important to understand when you look at the entire picture, and especially today. DC created the modern national security apparatus quickly, right after 9/11. That was the reason for this hastily written and implemented Patriot Act. And the creation of the Department of Homeland Security, that Orwellian organization. At the time, I thought, yeah, boy, that's a good thing, right? Because we have to protect our homeland. No, not in the fashion in which it was created and by those who created it and then later retooled it. When Obama and Holder came in a couple of years thereafter, they looked at these new tools as opportunities to create a very specific national security apparatus that would focus almost exclusively against you and I, against anyone that is going against the globalist objectives. The pre-existing FBI, for example, and the Department of Justice were then repurposed to become two of the four pillars of domestic national security apparatus, the domestic surveillance state. Now, the DHS, the ODNI, the DOJ, and FBI became the four pillars of this institution. Let me say that again. The DHS, the Office of Director of National Intelligence, which is ODNI, the Department of Justice, and the FBI became the four pillars of this newly created institution. And at the very top of these pillars is where you will find that fourth branch of government. Now, You know, back in 06, 07, we were distracted by the economic collapse that was taking place. By the time Obama took office in 09, you could almost sense, and I've talked to Randy Taylor about this and others about this, something was changing. Something was shifting. But we can only see that in hindsight, in retrospect. The four pillars put into place and the new fourth branch of government was quietly created. And this is what we're dealing with today. And that fourth branch of government, I would suggest to you, is illustrated by the J6 committee, this so-called bipartisan effort. But what's the intent? Oh, definitely to remove President Trump from office. But then again, you've got over here last week, that House resolution, that House bill coming through saying, wait a minute, we're going to remove the oversight and domestic oversight for the all branches of the U.S. military. Well, that's the, I would say, the legal definition of martial law here in the United States. And this is what Alex Jones last week and over the weekend was covering, the end of last week and over the weekend was covering. You read the bill and the codicils or the interior messages within the bill. You can see that this is absolutely unconstitutional. It blows away the Posse Comitatus Act and permits the military operations to take place here in the United States. Now, we already know that the military, components of the military, were active on the ground on January 6th. So this already took place. But hang on a second here as I go through this just a little bit more. And then you can read the rest. I'll leave the link in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. You remember Eisenhower's statement, right, about the beware of the military-industrial complex. Remember Kennedy's statement about the CIA, about shattering it into a million pieces having it taken away by the wind. The warnings also of Richard Nixon, and by the way, Watergate is not what you think it was. There was a gentleman that I might have come on talking about Watergate to explain some of the deeper things about Watergate and about how that was kind of how that connected to the JFK assassination loosely to events henceforth. But it is us, we the people, obviously, as a result of the Patriot Act and all things subsequent, the weaponized intelligence agency system that was created post 9/11/01, that you and I are under surveillance, constant surveillance. When you look very closely at the intelligence apparatus that is now in place, it's not being constructed, it's already there. The fewer components, specifically the military, taking away the oversight of domestic operations of the U.S. military. Now you can understand that, okay, we're in the final stages and something bad is coming. The intelligence branch, the intelligence community, is really has really the ultimate control over every other branch of government. And I say that because there's also the component that, think Hunter Biden laptop, think Hunter Biden iPhone, iCloud, and so on. It's really an independent branch of government with no oversight. It was created to be that way post 9/11. And the current mission of this intelligence community writ large is by design. The objectives of the mission is by design, whoever controls it. Who's controlling it now? The people making decisions inside this fourth branch of government, the unregulated and out of control branch of government that impacts every part of our lives. It's pretty murky, right? There are many people within this unregulated branch with this little known, very little recognized branch. It's out of control. None of these people were elected, and our elected House members, they don't even know how the system works. I'm talking about House members and even the House Intelligence Committee members. They have little clue, at least in my view. In April of 2016, and I'm going to conclude with this. Consider this. This will make the point. How out of control the intelligence community was, and how dangerous it was even then, now even more so. Video one, the first video one. Eric the tech's over there busy. And I said that, and he popped his head up, and he's like, okay. Okay, so the FBI, in April of 2016, we know the FBI launched this counterintelligence operation against a presidential candidate, Donald Trump. We know that. The questioning about that operation, a very key component to that, Elise Stefanik, in early 2017, March of 2017, got word that, wait a minute, President Trump is a presidential candidate? They had surveillance on him? Light bulbs are going off. Watch this. This is from March of 2017. She's got Comey in the hot seat. And she asked him a number of questions. Namely, to explain about how the DOJ informs other, in the ODNI, how the IC informs others of their operations, the oversight part of things. That's what you got to pay attention to. So it's about two and a half minutes. Watch this.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Ms. Stefanik's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Director Comey and Admiral Rogers, for your testimony today. My first set of questions are directed at Director Comey. Broadly, when the FBI has any open counterintelligence investigation, what are the typical protocols or procedures for notifying the DNI, the White House, and senior congressional leadership?
There is a practice of a quarterly briefing on sensitive cases to the chair and ranking of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. And the reason I hesitate is, thanks to feedback we've gotten, we're trying to make it better. And that involves a briefing of the Department of Justice, I believe the DNI, and the some portion of the National Security Council at the White House.
So if that's quarterly,
to brief them before Congress is briefed.
So it's quarterly for all three, then senior congressional leadership, the White House, and the DNI?
I think that's right. Now, that's by practice, not by rule or by written policy, which is why, thanks to the chair and ranking giving us feedback, we're trying to tweak it in certain ways.
So since in your opening statement you confirmed that there is a counterintelligence investigation currently open, and you also referenced that it started in July, when did you notify the DNI, the White House, or senior congressional leadership?
It's a good question. Congressional leadership, sometime recently, they were briefed on the nature of the investigation in some detail, as I said. Obviously, the Department of Justice has been aware of it all along. The DNI, I don't know what the DNI's knowledge of it was because we didn't have a DNI until Mr. Coates took office and I briefed him his first morning in office.
So just to drill down on this, if the open investigation began in July and the briefing of congressional leadership only occurred recently, why was there no notification prior to the past month?
I think our decision was it was a matter of such sensitivity that we wouldn't include it in the quarterly briefings.
So when you state our decision, is that your decision? Is that usually your decision what gets briefed in those quarterly updates?
No, it's usually the decision of the head of our counterintelligence division.
And just, again, to get the detailed on the record, why was the decision made not to brief senior congressional leadership until recently when the investigation had been open since July, a very serious investigation? Why was that decision made to wait months?
I think because of the sensitivity of the matter.
All right. So remember that? That was in March. I think that was March 20th of 2017 that took place. So here, you remember the first video, correct? Now, the first video was James Clapper. Now, at that time, Clapper was the national security advisor for Barack Hussein Obama, all right? And part of the creation of one of those pillars of the intelligence community. The second video shows that the office or the autonomy of the intelligence community, aside from, with no oversight by the executive branch or even the Gang of Eight or even the House Intelligence Committee, nobody. It's an autonomous group. It's really its own branch of government. It's really its own government, or at least those who control that. And those who control that operation control everything else that goes on in the United States, including and especially the language that's now being put into the congressional bill that will allow the U.S. military to have unfettered and unchecked military operations in the United States. What I attempted to show was subsequent to 9/11, in a nutshell, subsequent to 9/11, you had the creation of the Patriot Act. From there, you had the development of different positions, different organizations from the DHS to the ODNI. The DNI, ODNI, was created to avoid oversight in and of itself. Again, in the aftermath of 9/11, supposedly to fix problems, but instead under Obama and Holder and others to create a weapon against the American people. Link will be in the program description box to the articles and videos cited. I would urge you study on this because I'm going to tell you right now, we are going to see some things that are going to be happening here in America that are going to knock your socks off and are going to be extremely dangerous to the Patriots. If you're Steve Bannon, your freedom is at stake. If you're Peter Navarro, if you are any person, Alex Jones, anyone of any political ideology and a voice that speaks against the power structure of this fourth branch of government, you're in the crosshairs. And you could consider yourself no one or someone, but to them, you are someone. All right. With me right now is John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Before I get to John, I just want to say this. I had put off filing my taxes, and I got to tell you what, man, I'll tell you, I was going over all of my papers and everything this weekend, last week, and I looked at some of my credit card statements, and I was really surprised by the credit card rates being charged. Did you know you can actually roll all of your credit card debt into one monthly payment at a lower fixed interest rate? You can. Go to lightstream.com/Hagman. That's lightstream.com/Hagman. Lower your interest rate and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Rates start at just 5.73% APR with auto pay and excellent credit, plus the rate's fixed. It's never going to go up over the life of the loan. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 without any fees, and you can even get your money as soon as the same day that you apply. This is how to do it, folks. You've got to do this. If you haven't done so already, take advantage of this from my fine friends at Lightstream. Just for my listeners and viewers, apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Hagman. That is LIGHTSTREAM, lightstream.com/Hagman. Remember, two N's on Hagman. This is subject to credit approval. Rates range from 5.73% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% autopay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You'll thank me later. You'll be so glad you did this. I don't know. You'll be doing the dance. All right. John Moore, thelibertyman.com, I felt like I had a wonderful breakfast with him on Saturday morning. I didn't, though, but I felt like I was there. I'm not going to say any more than that. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. He's got a radio show every single day, Monday through Friday. If you go to thelibertyman.com, again, link in the program description box at HagmanReport.com, you can get to his website. There he is right there on your screen, jumping out of perfectly fine planes or riding motorcycles or vintage cars, looking dapper as ever. That's John Moore. John, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
Doug, outstanding. Good to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for your patience and allowing me to run over. I was talking about the House bill that takes away the oversight for domestic military operations. Have you got into that much at all, or have you looked into that?
I have not. It's always been the House Armed Services Committee that had that oversight. Is that, did they want to change that?
Yeah, Adam Schiff and others had are taking away that oversight. In other words, they can do whatever they want when they want without really checking in. It's always been two. The commander in chief has that as commander in chief has that role in assigning the military on different missions. But now that oversight and even the funding is unaccountable, it will be not accountable, which creates a state of essentially martial law.
That sounds like anarchy to me. Now,
yeah,
I have serious disagreements with the House Armed Services Committee and what they've been doing for almost half a century.
Yeah.
What entity is going to take their place of giving the day-to-day direction to the five branches? Is it six now? Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine, Coast Guards, and Space Force. I guess that's six. The president has ultimate authority, but the House Armed Services Committee has always been involved in day-to-day policy, or month-to-month, or year-to-year. So who's going to take their place, Doug, if you know?
Well, you know, I've been looking at the bill. I read the bill, and I reread the bill, and there are certain sections in it that give me great concern, cause me great concern. The legislation, let's see here. Yeah, I'm okay. You'll have to forgive me for my stumbling here. I'll just say I don't know the specifics. I know that the restraints, let me put it this way, the apparent restraints that held the military back from operations on American soil have or are being proposed to be removed. All right.
Well, it's posse comitatus. And
there it is.
They found ways around it. The best example, the most horrific example, is what they did in Waco, Texas. U.S. Army took FBI agents and trained them to use the weapons of war, which would be tanks and armored personnel carriers, and I don't know what else, but that's enough by itself, to get around Posse Comitatus. So the intent of Posse Comitatus is to prevent the weapons of war being used against American citizens by presumably U.S. military personnel. At the time Posse Comitatus was enacted, nobody even considered that the weapons of war, tanks and armored personnel carriers, would be handed over by the military to the FBI to be used against American citizens. That was not even a thought to be considered at the time.
Right.
So they already have found a way to get around it. And in fact, my friend, Command Sergeant Major Dan Page, helped train FBI agents to run this equipment. That was one of his jobs, which he, I believe, now regrets, but that's what was taking place at the time. So it's a dangerous precedent, extremely dangerous. If they don't get it done before the midterms, hopefully we'll have enough patriotic Republicans elected, which is only 5 months away, to prevent that from happening, Doug, and I hope we do.
All right, let me, I found my notes on this, and I got to tell you, you start reading government documents for any length of time, you know, your head starts to bleed. To be precise, Adam Schiff filed an amendment to the NDAA, okay, that would conceal any information collected by the U.S. military for use in congressional investigations or court proceedings, thereby, okay, and I wrote this, thereby removing any oversight. So this cover-up of enormous proportions and preemptive power grab to prevent any kind of political opposition oversight at any time. And in this case, I would say conservative oversight. Now, and if you really think about what this means specifically, Austin, Defense Secretary Austin, can decline any request whatsoever for materials related to, Afghanistan withdrawal, any kind of, anything, essentially. Or can authorize the same. The autonomy.
Well, Doug, that's incredibly dangerous to take away that oversight, to have the any branch of the military deny documents to the Congress is incredibly dangerous. Now, there are ways of dealing with sensitive material, and they go into executive session in a select committee. That's the way it's been done for, I know, since World War II.
Right.
And I don't see anything wrong or broken with that. Now, we had the one congressman who had a Chinese girlfriend who we're pretty sure was a Chinese intelligence operative.
Swalwell, bang, had, bang, fang, fang, right? Yeah, there
right,
we go.
Yeah, that guy. And we need to have within these protocols, we need to make sure that due diligence is done on anybody who has access to this. Just because they're appointed to an intelligence committee doesn't mean they're a patriotic American or trustworthy. That doesn't mean that at all. So the due diligence needs to be done on any man or woman who has access to the sensitive material, Doug. Is there a reason given why they want to take away this kind of oversight in the legislation?
No. This amendment to the NDAA, Amendment to Rules Committee, 117-54, Schiff of California. No, I don't see any kind of preamble to this authorization.
Typically there is, but to the general legislation, no. But not to an amendment. A lot of times an amendment is more brief and without the explanatory preamble that you see in almost all legislation.
Right. So this is actually, this is loosing the reins in direct opposition of Posse Comitatus. And it's unconstitutional, and it avoids any kind of oversight by the Well, let's see what it would be. By the, again, I'm looking at my notes here.
Well Doug, any right-thinking Republican or Democrat, either one, should be very fearful of this kind of legislation passing. If they're doing it because they think they're going to harm Republican oversight in the future, they need to reverse the coin and understand that Republicans in control could do the same thing to them. So it's a two-edged sword. And it's very short-sighted and very wrong to introduce and attempt to pass legislation of this nature.
Right.
Extremely wrong, extremely dangerous.
But, you know, again, as I read this and as I was going through this, I kept going back to the January 6th committee, and really their objective, what the objective, true objectives of the J6 committee are. And I find it interesting that, for example, the Republicans in Congress, for example, would be prevented from examining this amendment would disallow any kind of oversight examination of the military's role in January 6th. So I'm thinking, how convenient is this? And by the way, even though this was sponsored by Schiff, this has the I think it's pretty clear, has the backing by Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, also members on the J6 committee. So what are they trying to hide here specifically, especially from the opposition, political opposition, in addition to what they're trying to do, but also what are they trying to hide? Go ahead.
Well, Doug, if they're attempting to conceal any branch of U.S. military involvement in January 6th, obviously there's something to be concealed. Otherwise, why would they go to the trouble?
Exactly. So, because people said, well, you know, the Republicans went back in power after the midterms, they can change it back. Well, wait a second. This is written as if there's not going to be any transfer of power. I mean, when I read this, and again, it's pretty convoluted to me, any kind of government, you try to read this, and I want people to talk to me like I'm 12 years old, okay, sometimes. But you look at this and you think, okay, what am I not getting here? And what I'm not getting is the warm fuzzies from this removal of oversight and the fact that they can hide what they're doing here in the United States, including and especially retroactively to January 6th. I mean, right. That's just, it blows my mind. Go ahead.
Well, it should blow your mind, Doug. Our opposition, the socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims is what I call them as a group. They're getting quite bold, and they feel like they can do anything, get away with anything. And so far they have. What happened in November of 2020 gave them a lot of belief that they could do and get away with anything they chose to. And so far they have, Doug. So far they have.
And what I tried to do in the first segment before you came on was provide a run-up to, like, from 9/11 to 2020 in the creation of this fourth branch of government, if you will, based on the Patriot Act, and then refined with this amendment to the NDAA, otherwise attached to H.R.
Let me tell you a little bit of nuance about the creation of Homeland Security. Because I've worked with several men who observe this personally. As you, Doug, and most of our listeners know, it's almost impossible to fire a federal employee, damn near impossible. If they show up at work, don't cause any trouble, it's really hard to fire them. So let's go back 21 years ago to 9/11/01. The Homeland Security, the Patriot Act, of course, had already been drafted, ready for the event. There would be no way to pass something that large without a major event. So 9/11/01 gave them the excuse they needed, the pretext. Once Homeland Security was set up and running, here's what happened, Doug. There's probably, let's say, for a round number, 50 federal agencies. I don't know what the real number is. It doesn't matter. All of whom had what I might call deadwood employees, employees that were not working very well, not working at all, who couldn't get along with their coworkers, who made trouble on one hand. On the other, they couldn't be fired. But what the department heads in these existing agencies could do was transfer them to another agency. And they did, what do? They transfer them to the Department of Homeland Security. For quite a few years, because of these transfers of the employees who couldn't get along and couldn't work well with others, as they say, the Department of Homeland Security, the first 8 or 10 years, was almost non-functional because it was so full of these transferred people from other agencies that didn't work, couldn't work, were troublemakers, and so forth. Now, they've had enough time, Homeland Security, to hire competent people, and my belief is they probably are somewhat competent now. And many of the troublemakers that they couldn't get along have probably retired by now as well. But that's a little history there, Doug, about the Department of Homeland Security. We do not need a Department of Homeland Security. That's the purview of the FBI. And of course, the FBI is totally corrupt from top to bottom, left to right. FBI needs to be either disbanded or a complete rehab of the FBI. It's so messed up for so many reasons.
Right, and then we have that we haven't talked about is if you remember during Obama's tenure and during his occupancy of the White House. I found it interesting that I think he first used the phrase fake news. But think about this in the context of everything that's going on right now. Obama, the coordination that he attempted between big tech and the U.S. intelligence community, ordering his U.S. intelligence assets and his assets, not the United States, but his assets, to work with Twitter and Facebook and other social media giants in order to take over to combat ostensibly fake news, but to take over and control the narrative about everything that we're seeing today. That's kind of interesting as well. And kind of a side note, yet an important one to what we're talking about. Go ahead.
Well, Doug, the events we're talking about are not spontaneous. They're planned months, if not years, in advance. Nothing's left to chance. Going back to the Patriot Act, look at the complexity of that legislation. It was what? Was it 1,000 pages, 1,200?
It was massive.
Massive.
A few trees were cut down. Yeah.
Roger that. It just doesn't pop up out of nowhere. It takes focus groups and manpower, women power, to draft it, edit it, and re-edit it, and redraft it to get a final form ready to be submitted to Congress. It took, I would say, at least a year minimum before that drafting of the Patriot Act was done, and probably research going into it several years before that. So what we're living with, Doug, is the consequences of decades of planning to create what we have now. I'll give you a good example of where we are. I went on my first and only Caribbean cruise in January 2020. As we were coming back to the States, the intercom on the ship said multiple times to have your passport ready, have your passport ready. So being a good passenger on the cruise ship, I had my passport in my pocket ready to present at customs. So they had about 20, maybe 30, or maybe it's 50. It was a lot of customs agents in the customs house there. And as I approached, I noticed everybody was going through really quickly, and it became my turn. They had a camera facing my face, and they didn't even want to or look at my passport, either one. They just identified me as who I am through facial recognition, which I assume is AI. The actual custom counters actually had no custom agents. These were freestanding cameras before we even got to the counter. So we're at a point now, Doug, where facial identification is routinely being used by federal agencies to identify citizens. I didn't know it was that advanced. I found out that day, of course, that it is. That carries over into every aspect of our lives, Doug, to identify us from the literally hundreds of thousands of cameras around the United States, license plate identification, identification with your cell phone, and, of course, people themselves. We talked a few weeks ago about people who got the clot shot becoming Wi-Fi transmitters. It all comes together, Doug, to make a complete unbreakable circle of control. That's exactly where we are, Doug, right now.
You know, it's interesting you use that terminology that people who got the injection, it's interesting that you use that terminology because I heard a doctor, and forgive me, I don't remember the podcast, I don't remember the doctor's name, but talking about the people who got this are actually transmitting, and I use that term transmission, transmitting, to others as well, the toxic components of what they received, okay? And there is a component as well, a frequency component built into this, and that's should be recognized as well, which is why one might explain why there's metallic substances within this injection, both graphene substances as well as other metallic counterparts that we don't even know because they haven't released the full ingredient list. So there's that. So interesting you use that phrase or that turn of phrase about transmission.
Yes, sir. Something came up late last week. I don't know if you are aware of it or not. This is a segue into the COVID vaccinations. A video interview with a man in Toronto, Canada. The family business that he helps run has been manufacturing coffins, caskets, for 30
yes.
years.
Yes.
And they noticed beginning in July of last year, a year ago this month, a dramatic increase in coffin sales, which is consistent with everything else we've been hearing. But in addition to that, something he's never seen in his 30 years of manufacturing coffins, bulk orders of coffins coming in from the funeral homes. That is so sad and so horrific, Doug, that children are dying in such great numbers that the funeral homes are compelled to order children's coffins in bulk.
Yes.
What's taking place here, Doug, is the most horrific, barbaric crime against humanity since records have been kept for 5,000-6,000 years. There is no precedence for this. And unfortunately, the average person out there, man or woman, has no clue what's going on, do they, Doug?
No, they don't. And if they do, or if they get wind of this, I find it very interesting. The fight against the truth is so vicious. You've got, again, this is why I mentioned the intelligence community, Obama, fake news, and the merging of big tech with that Obama regime, okay? People are just, I saw that. I saw that headline, or I saw that news article about children's coffins. They're actually on back order, okay? People are just unresponsive to this reality that we're seeing. I find it incredibly sad and incredibly, I don't even know how to describe it.
Well, there's a saying I've been using for decades. Don't disturb my reality with your facts.
There, yeah.
And I've also used the example of many times denial. Denial is not a river in Egypt. Denial is a very expected and normal human response to unwelcome news. And I first saw this, we were talking a lot about the intelligence community. Well, I was at the lowest level of the intelligence community when I was an intelligence analyst with military intelligence. I was a 20-year-old corporal in Vietnam. The only thing below me in intelligence was a wastebasket. I was at the very lowest level on one hand. On the other, I still had access to documents from the CIA, from RAND Corporation, from the Army Security Agency, from military intelligence, from the Pentagon. And that access gave me knowledge that in September 1967, I had knowledge that the Chinese New Year celebration at the end of January 1968 was going to be the point for a major communist Viet Cong, North Vietnamese attack. Even at the lowest level, I knew that. And I attempted to tell my buddies I worked with. I said, guys, you get that disgusting fruitcake from your parents for Christmas, don't throw it away. Any place you can get ammunition, get it and keep it. A few paid heed, most did not. So it was an early life lesson for young 20-year-old John Moore that people will be in denial despite having accurate, timely information about what's coming. Doug, imagine you're in a combat zone. You have mortar attacks every two or three nights. Every time you leave the building, you wear a steel helmet and carry an M14 rifle, maybe a 45 or a Thompson submachine gun like I did. You wear body armor. And your buddy, who deals with the classified documents, tells you what's coming, and you ignore him. That's pretty serious denial, Doug, don't you think?
I would think so, yeah. Yeah. But now, was that a survival mechanism, so to speak?
For the coping, guys in denial?
For a coping mechanism? Yes.
Coping might be more accurate.
Okay.
Yeah. Yesterday was fine. Today is fine. Tomorrow's going to be fine also.
Yeah.
And it's not just the men I worked with in Vietnam. That's human beings in general. A book I read about the resistance of the Jewish, mostly farmers in Poland against the Germans. They're Jewish farmers, and they would, the Third Reich, the German army would be moving into this Polish village. The teenage Jewish young men and women would literally run out the back door of the cabin as the German army was approaching down the street, run through the forest to their cousins, the next village over, maybe a couple, two, three, 4 miles away. And they would tell their cousins, the German army just came to our village. They're rounding up Jewish people. You need to evacuate because they'll be here soon. The Jewish cousins didn't do that either, except maybe some of the teenagers ran off into the forest with the shoes on their feet, maybe a butcher knife from the kitchen, a blanket, whatever they could carry. Firearms were few and far between. If they had one, they would take it, obviously. Another good example of denial. When your own cousin comes to your house, who lives at the village 2 or 3 miles away, and says, the Germans are coming, and you don't do anything except wait for the Germans to come? So, Doug, there's plenty of precedents throughout history of people being in denial. That's nothing new. It's expected. It's normal, expected human behavior. Doug, I refer to myself as a broadcast journalist. You're an investigator with a microphone. But between the two of us, we have a huge outreach to a tiny percentage of Americans who are not in denial. Americans who understand what's going on because they listen to your show, they listen to my show, they listen to Mike Adams, Steve Quayle, and so forth. They know what's going on and are getting ready. We are the pure blood remnant, Doug. That's what we are. You and I are listeners who did not get the clot shot. We are the pure blood remnant who are, in fact, getting ready for what's coming. We're storing up food. We're storing up water. We're getting medical supplies, a way to stay warm in the winter, because this next winter, from what I'm seeing, people may not be able to afford to heat their homes with the price of utilities going up so dramatically, especially if you heat with natural gas, heating oil, and so forth, propane. So our listeners are getting ready now. Doug, it'll be winter in 5 months. This next week, it'll be over 100 degrees in my neighborhood 4 days in a row, and over 90 the rest. It's hard to think about wintertime right now, the third week of July 2022, but winter's only 5 months away. And the time to get ready is now. Most of our listeners are already doing that. I want to encourage them to get ready to be heat independent this coming winter. What great peace of mind could there be, Doug, to know that you have your own wood-burning stove, firewood, wood pellets, whatever it is, it's going to be burned at appliance, independent of the power grid. Wouldn't that be great man, peace of mind?
That is absolutely so important. The food, water, shelter, heat, that means heat as well. And by the way, not to take you off track, but to reaffirm what you were saying earlier, check this out. Okay, this is from Western Standard. Okay, now, look at that headline. Casket manufacturer reports unprecedented orders of child-sized coffins. All right, there you have it. And it's I should note this. Within this article, the individual providing this information said that the sales today versus the pre-pandemic period are up 30, perhaps 40% or more. And considering the industry, a 30 or 40% increase in sales, something dramatic has had to have happened. So there you have it. Just to reaffirm what you were saying. And I knew I saw it somewhere and I just was able to recall it through my history. But you're right. I mean, so yes, we have to prepare for what is coming. What do you see coming? You talk about this every day. What do you see coming?
Well, I do. We had the sworn testimony before a congressional subcommittee of Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Teresa Long, who said that, in her opinion, her professional medical opinion, at the time she was in charge of determining the flight worthiness, the health of all pilots down there, I believe in Huntsville, Alabama, our Army pilots, that all these pilots should be taken off flight status. And of course, she wouldn't confine that to just Army pilots, but all services who have pilots, which is all the services, all their pilots should be taken off flight status. That alone, whether they're taken off flight status or not, we're already looking at a compromised air mobility for all services. We're looking at compromised services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, Coast Guard, Space Force, all being compromised because of the clot shots. We're looking at all first responders nationwide being compromised. Police, state troopers, paramedics, firemen, nurses, emergency room personnel, all being compromised by the clot shots. Now, this is the seventh month of the year. A medical doctor giving testimony at the congressional subcommittee hearing was in the rotunda in January, taking a break from the congressional hearings about the clot shots, made the following statement. More men and women and children will die this calendar year, 2022, than any year in history, in recorded history. And we're on track for that to be true, Doug. We're absolutely on track. The year is half over. And as you said a moment ago, beginning of July of last year, we're into the 13th month now, we saw a 30 to 40% increase in people dying in this country. Where are they dying from? Blood clots, heart attacks, strokes, other things. People who had cancer that was in remission, that cancer flares up and becomes a very aggressive killer cancer where it had been under control for 3, 4, 5 years or more. Just as one example. So, Doug, we're into the gentle kill-off. I say gentle because it's not obvious. Most people don't read the obituaries. I'd say maybe 5 or 10% of the population reads obituaries every issue like I do. It's a very small percentage, assuming they even get a newspaper, which is a very small percentage of people to begin with. But I had this discussion with a lady. She is a volunteer at a thrift store. And they get stacks of newspapers from the publisher that didn't get circulated to wrap up glassware and so forth. And I asked her, do you read the obituaries? She said, yes. I said, have you noticed since July of last year a dramatic increase in the obituaries columns? She says, yes, John, I have. My local newspaper, the Steelville Star, Doug, published once a week every Thursday, or actually every Wednesday, I get it Thursday. I've been getting this newspaper 21 years. Every issue up until July of last year, typically one page, sometimes not even one page of obituaries. Now it's routinely a page and a half to 2 pages. It's become routine, Doug, the increase in the people dying. I've read it on my show. I've read the name and age of people in the obituaries. Way too many people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. Way too many. More than you would expect from the usual accident or automobile accident or other reason people in those young ages die. Way too many. But that's what's happening nationwide. So, Doug, we're in the kill-off right now. The population reduction program is well underway. They, being the National Institute of Health, the CDC, are attempting to ramp up the mask wearing and the fear all over again with what they're calling new variants. Well, Doug, when a flu bug or a flu virus goes through a transition and becomes something new, it becomes weaker. We've known that for a century or more.
That's accepted science. And I don't want to interrupt, take you out of your train of thought here. But what you just said, too, look at this headline. Sudden and unexpected, at least 11 vacationers dropped dead on Italian beaches in 24 hours. And you know how this is explained? Well, the heat makes your blood thicker. No, it doesn't.
Oh, come on.
No,
oh,
it doesn't.
On.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so
come on.
This, okay, so people are saying, well, John, what evidence do you have? Yeah, I don't see a lot of people dying around me. Well, look at this headline. 11 vacationers dropped dead on Italian beaches in 24 hours. And Google attempted to suppress this news in many ways over the last 24 to 36 hours. But here it is, what you're saying. And you know, people just are, and they're buying this. Oh, well, it's the heat because of the climate change.
For every 11 people that die, there's 10 that were seriously injured that did not die. That's the ratio.
Right.
So if 11 people died, that means 110 people got sick and did not die. These numbers are crazy. You know, we always have new listeners, and I know you and I have talked before about the professional tennis tournament in Florida. I believe it was about 3 months ago. Now, tennis for an amateur or hobbyist is not a big deal. You go out and you play for an hour and you go drink some lemonade and you're done. At that level of competition, professional tennis players play in the heat for 8 hours straight with a few breaks. These are superb athletes, world-class athletes. And in this tennis tournament in Florida 3 months ago, 16 had to drop out because of chest pains. Their hearts were hurting. Doug, that doesn't happen. You may occasionally find one professional tennis player who has heart issues, but not 16 professional tennis players at that level at the same tournament. That simply does not happen.
Oh. But, Doug,
you keep talking about my website. Doug, I've got more than 200
you do.
Articles and videos about COVID-19 and the COVID vaccinations at my website at thelibertyman.com. The evidence is clear. The evidence is convincing. The evidence is overwhelming.
Yes, it is.
That the COVID-19 itself is a biological weapon. That the COVID vaccinations, regardless of the manufacturer, are weaponized medicines themselves. I hate to call them vaccinations because, well, they don't meet the definition of what traditionally is called a vaccination. In fact, it was August 2020, I guess it was, they changed the definition of what a vaccine constitutes in order to be able to call it a vaccination. Now, Doug, I do private consultations. There are details at my website. I had two healthcare professionals. They came here from the East Coast, I believe it's Pennsylvania, as a matter of fact. The gentleman is a chiropractor. The wife is a nurse practitioner, which is basically the equivalent of medical doctor these days. One of their patients still does work for one of the three companies manufacturing the COVID clot shot vaccination. And here's what they were told. Well, here's what we were told publicly, that Operation Warp Speed did something never done before. Develop a vaccine, was it 6 months or 9 months? It was no more than 9 months. That's never been done. And quite frankly, based on the testimony of this employee at this pharmaceutical company, it still wasn't done. She told her healthcare professionals in the confidence of their relationship that these companies had worked more than 6 years to develop these vaccines. Mm-hmm. At that point, of course, after 6 years development, there was no experimental status at all. Privately, publicly, they're still called experimental because they haven't publicly have not gone through all the protocols. Privately, secretly, all three vaccines went through all the proper protocols necessary that any vaccine would go for. And of course, they got the end result they were looking for, which is serious injury and death.
It's not a bug, it's a feature. That's right. It's the intended outcome. Yes.
It's not a side effect. It's a direct intended effect. And that's what people need to get through their heads. It's not a side effect. People getting sick, being injured, and dying is not a side effect. It's a direct intended effect. And word's getting around slowly. The mass media is doing a great job hiding the evidence. The various reporting system, if you look at it, has all the evidence you need there. And that's an official government reporting system that is reports maybe on a good day 10% of the injuries and deaths. But even with that lightweight reporting, you still have more than enough fatalities and serious injuries to shut the whole thing down within a month of it being introduced. But here we are, a year and a half, slightly more than a year and a half, since the introduction of these poisonous substances. People are still scrambling to get injected into their bodies and the bodies of their innocent children. A story I ran across this morning, one of my listeners lives in Australia, Doug. He forwarded me a story about an Australian mother. She dutifully had all three of her children get the COVID vaccination clot shot. Within days, two of those children were dead. This is tragedy that is hard to describe. Losing a child, Doug, that's about as bad as it gets for a parent to go through that. It's the thing we all fear as a parent, our grandparent.
I can attest to that. Yeah.
They want to kill us, and they're having a great opportunity to do so, and they will. They will kill tens of millions of Americans, Westerners in general. Who won't be killed? The Chinese and the Russians. That's who won't be killed by these COVID clot shots. They're not participating. They simply aren't. And ladies and gentlemen, if you happen to be one of those unfortunate people who got the COVID vaccination clot shot, please don't get a booster. You may be one of the fortunate ones that got the saline solution or a dramatically reduced or version of the clot shot that didn't have enough poison in it to hurt you. Please don't get a booster. If you have friends or relatives that have not yet got the vaccine, almost everybody has that was going to, please advise them to not get a booster shot. You may save a life. They may pay attention, they may not, but at least make the effort. Making the effort is important, Doug, isn't it?
It is, and we need to make sure we keep pushing that. And you know, there's not too much we can do. You can't undo something like that. I mean, there are ways to detox and stuff, but in terms of the larger picture, no. You know, but you can stop doing the damage by stop. We have to, I guess the bottom line is this, whether it is the talk of additional mandates coming out, they're coming. Mask mandates are coming back.
They're starting all over again.
Yep, everything. So don't comply. If it says no mask, no entry, then say F you, okay?
Well, I was talking to a lady at my church service yesterday when a church service ended. She was considering wearing a mask once again. And I said, ma'am, here's how you can tell real quickly the mask didn't work. Light a scented candle and see if you can smell the scented candle. It's real simple.
Or as Alex Stein said recently, you know, if a fart can go through Levi's, you think the virus can't go through your stupid mask?
Well, Doug, it was church. We had to be polite.
Man, there you go. You're always polite.
I try. Now, when I was arresting somebody, I always tried to treat them with respect, even though they were drunk, until the point where they got violent, then everything changed.
It's a long way from my phone book smacking upside the head. But go ahead. All right.
Well, yeah. Doug, we're in a tactical retreat here. We, the pure blood remnant, pure blood are the ones who did not get the clot shot. That makes us pure blood. We're the remnant because we are a minority. I don't know the true numbers of Americans who got the clot shot. The official numbers, you can't trust them because they come from the same people lying to us the past 2.5 years. So there's very little to trust as to the true numbers. How many people got the clot shot? Half? Three quarters? One third? I don't know, Doug. Do you have anything solid you can base it on?
No. And you know, even if the government came out and said X amount had the shots, right? How do you even know? How do you know? And are you going to trust their numbers? And by the way, about how many passed away or died from the SARS-CoV-2? How do you even know that's true?
I was talking to the former coroner of my accounting, Paul Hudson. He's also a funeral director. And while he was coroner, he resigned that post about a year ago or so. While he was coroner, there was a man, a local guy. He died of a heart attack in his kitchen. He's in the kitchen doing something, had a heart attack, fell over and died. And he was sent to a hospital in the St. Louis city out of our county. And he didn't officially die. He was still somewhat alive when they hauled him off in an ambulance. When he got to the emergency room, he died of the consequences of that heart attack. When the body was shipped back to Crawford County, the death certificate said COVID-19. And my friend, a former coroner, he was incensed. He was enraged that the cause of death would be changed from the real cause of death, a heart attack, to COVID-19. And I said, Paul, you know there was a financial incentive to do that, don't you? He says, yeah, I know, $30,000 incentive.
And it varies by location, by the way.
Yeah. From the reality of a heart attack to the fantasy of COVID-19. Doug, that happened hundreds of thousands of times all over this country. The financial incentive to change death certificates from the reality of, well, even, I don't know how this came out or why the state of Washington finally admitted it, but it was, I believe, around August of 2020, the state of Washington admitted publicly that all gunshot deaths were being listed on the official death certificate as COVID-19 deaths.
Well, Rachel Walensky had testified under oath and admitted with COVID, from COVID, same thing. In fact, with COVID was actually from COVID, according to the official numbers. I've got no doubt in my mind that this was a bioweapon created in a lab, compliments of Fauci, which killed some of my friends, and I hold Fauci and Barrick and those bastards accountable for the murder of my friends. So I've got no doubt that exists, but don't fudge the numbers like they're doing. John, we only have a minute and a half left. I can't believe
it. Okay, well, Doug, it's always great to be with you. I hope that this broadcast will help wake up people, help people that have got a shot and survived without issues to refuse to get a booster, no matter the consequences. It's literally a matter of life and death to not get the clot shot and or not get the boosters. Literally, not figuratively, literally a matter of life and death, Doug.
Amen. And let's leave it at that, folks. Take it to heart. Take it to heart, please. John Moore, thelibertyman.com.
See you next Monday.
Thank you. God bless you, my friend. John Moore has got the greatest informational website, I'm telling you. Bookmark thelibertyman.com and listen to his programs. He's got some great guests on every day of the week. Fabulous man. And I appreciate all he does. All right, folks. Again, the J6. Oh, my goodness. The J6 committee. Understand how that fits into the recent amendment to the NDAA. With that, have a great night, everyone. Good night.